Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Fuel Your Fandom Podcast. My name is Saint.
And I am Jim.
Jim. Yes, I'm pretty sure. Jim? Yeah?
Last time I checked, anyway.
Pretty sure. And we're back, all up in your ear holes once again. Thankful for the opportunity to do that. Jim, how was your weekend? We're recording again on Monday, so how was your weekend?
It was lovely. It was Mother's Day weekend, so I had a chance to take my mom out to brunch. We had some gifts. The grandkids came over. It was lovely. But apart from that, I pretty much spent my entire weekend on vacation in Hyrule, because as we record this, Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom dropped late last week.
Yep.
And I would say, I don't know about you, but I do know about you. We both spent a significant amount of time kicking it with Link over the weekend. And as much as I've done really good things for myself in the past couple weeks, trying to regulate my sleep schedule, that kind of went out the window a little bit the last couple of days as I tried to make some progress on the game.
Well, excuse me, princess.
Yeah, like you said, it was Mother's Day, so Friday, I went out and picked up the game on release day, and I was batting around a bunch of different places where to pick it up, trying to, because it's one of the first Switch games to come in at a $70 price tag, and
yeah,
that's a bit stunning. I mean, not when you play the game, you kind of realize, you know, it's that big a game, but it's kind of initially stunning. And usually, if you buy it like Walmart, they have like a $10 discount or something like that. Walmart usually has pretty good discounts on the first run major titles. Not today. Not in this case.
Not today.
Not today, Satan.
But I went to... I mean, I shopped around, like, virtually shopped around while all the stores, waiting for all the stores to open. It was like 9 in the morning. Nothing was open yet. So I'm looking at GameStop's prices. I'm looking at, you know, Best Buy's prices and Amazon's prices. And what I finally stumbled upon is, one of my game groups on Facebook had pointed out that Costco's, which really don't deal in video games all that much anymore, are going to be getting they were going to be getting a select number of the games, and that they were coming in at a $60 price tag instead of that $70. So I mean, it's $10 is $10, right? So
deals, we got them.
I went to Costco right when they opened and snatched up Tears of the Kingdom, slice of pizza for my trouble for breakfast, and there you have it. It was Mother's Day, so I did take care of my wife. She likes it when I cook for her. I don't really cook a whole lot much anymore because, you know, it's very stressful for me after the failure of the cooking show and everything. I just don't try to get all fancy with my cooking anymore. And which is a shame. I really enjoy doing it. I just kind of have a I don't want to say stigma against it, but I got some kind of like a mental block that just I've not really enjoyed being in the kitchen all that much since then.
No, I get that. I've only written one screenplay in the last couple of years because, you know, you take a stab at something and throw your everything that you have at it, and it just doesn't go and kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Ugh, yuck.
Yeah, for sure. And so, but I do it for like event nights, like for holidays or for in this case Mother's Day. And I said, I want you to pick whatever you want to eat. I will make it for you. I want to cook something special for you. And I said, don't pick dumb bullshit like tacos or pizza or any like pasta or something simple. I don't want to just like make you comfort food and just have that be it, because this is supposed to be like a gift to you. So I said,
this is an occasion.
Right, exactly. And she's like, well, I don't think the kids will like it, or I don't know if the kids will like it. I'm like, I don't give a shit. The kids will eat. If they don't eat it, screw it. They can make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for all I care. So she finally settled on, it's a Korean dish called japchae. I'm probably mispronouncing that horrendously. But it's Korean glass noodles, the sweet potato starch noodles. And it's got like, there's some like spinach and onion and carrot and a couple other things in it. Beef, braised beef. I went and got a nice grass-fed ribeye, cut that into little thin strips and used that. And mushrooms. Normally I'd go with shiitake, but she's not a fan, so I used regular portobello mushroom. Fantastic. it turned out great, which is the first time I've ever made it, so it could have gone either way. So, but it turned out really good. So we had that for Saturday because I had to work 12 hours on Mother's Day. So other than that, you're right. Vacation in Hyrule, cooking things in Hyrule. So how's your experience with the game been so far? And we're going to try and keep it relatively spoiler-free, but...
Yeah. I played for, I want to say I'm probably at least 10 to 12 hours into it now. I got mine. You and I both are big fans of physical media.
Yep.
And I knew that I wanted to, I think I've bought a grand total now of 3 Switch games on actual game card. Breath of the Wild, Super Mario Odyssey, and now Tears of the Kingdom.
All great games.
And, yeah, they're all great games, and they're all, you know, system sellers. They're all just fantastic pieces of software.
Right.
And like I said, I got about maybe 10, 12 hours into it, maybe a little more. I lose track of time sometimes when I'm really grinding it away, but that's why I say grinding it away, because this game is a little bit more grindy, I'm finding, than Breath of the Wild was. Again, not a spoiler, but it took me probably a good day and a half worth of playing before I actually was able to buy any clothes. Like Link is running around in his boxer shorts, taking damage like Arthur used to in Ghosts and Goblins, just rocking like 3 hearts for most of the first couple hours of the game. I mean, I'm just finding the pace of progress is a little bit glacial. I just got pants, probably 2 or 3 hours before I quit for the night last night.
Yay!
So, yeah, it's just, it's taking a minute to really get underway, but so far I really like what I'm seeing. The mechanics are very similar to Breath of the Wild. The sound design, the environmental design, it's not going to be any great leap forward in terms of graphical fidelity or game mechanics. There's some new things. There are a couple things that are pretty new, which I won't spoil, that are really fun, that I'm having a fun time messing around with, but I'm also finding that I'm doing things out of sequence.
Yeah. Apparently so am I.
I did one particular task that at the end of it I was supposed to do something that I didn't have the equipment for yet, so I kind of had to improvise a little bit, and it was a little messy, but other than that, the game is, it presents you with interesting problem-solving solutions and gives you many different ways to achieve what it is you're trying to do, and I'm finding that really fun.
Yeah, okay, so this isn't a spoiler if you've seen the trailer or anything. In the trailer, you get to see that something's happened to Link's right arm. And you learn about that. And basically, he's got a new right arm. And the right arm is comes with an ability that is called Ultra Hand. And Ultra Hand is... how to put it mildly... people are finding new and inventive ways to either A, kill themselves, or B, create problem-solving answers that maybe were not even potentially on the developer's radar. And I'll give you a small example of this, okay? And there's articles all over the internet already about people going on and using Ultra Hand, the fuse ability, to create workarounds for shit that they should have no business working a workaround for. There's a tower that I was under the impression that you needed to climb, which you didn't. But it was surrounded by bokoblins, which I guess are one of the, there's the big old bad guys for the game. Your generic stormtrooper types, your monster, generic monster.
Your mooks, your goons, your cannon fodder, they throw waves of these dudes at you, and you can just mow them down pretty easily.
Well, not they're when dangerous you have in numbers, 3 hearts.
But not one-on-one.
I have 3 hearts.
That's the thing.
This was like the first thing I did when I set foot off a... you start the game in the sky. There's 3 levels to this game, which is what's one of the biggest selling points. People are talking about how much hard drive space this game takes up and how much space it is. And the essential Hyrule map is mostly the same. They've adapted a few things. There's a few new towns, things like that. But the overworld map is mostly the same. But they also now have an underworld, which is, you know, you go into a chasm on the ground, and now all of a sudden there's this deep, dark pit underworld that's under Hyrule that you have to contend with. And then there's the upper world where you start out. It's in the sky on these sky islands. And so you first start off on the Sky Islands. That's probably where you spent the first 3 or 4 hours of your game, at very least, trying to beat the temples to get the ability to leave. But once you hit Hyrule, you're left with, like, no clothing, a stick for a weapon, and...
if you're lucky.
And, like, 3 or 4 hearts, maybe. And so I find this tower, and I want to climb this tower, but the one entry point to this tower is surrounded by bokoblins and moblins and all sorts of scary things that are easily outclass me at that point, especially as I have no weapons to speak of. And the entire tower is surrounded by spikes. So the only entry point is in this one spot. And so I go around to the back of this place, trying to find out. I'm scoping the entire place around without trying to arouse the guard's suspicion. And so what I find is the... in the back, there's a bunch of trees. And so I'm like, you know what? Problem-solving ability and whatnot. You can use this fuse ability to join any two things together. So here's what I'm going to do. I chopped down a bunch of trees, created a bunch of logs, and I created what I called Ultra Tree. Because this log was like 5 or 6 logs long. And then you pick it up with like your force ability or whatever you want to call this shit. The Ultra Hand ability allows you to lift things that are far more weighty than you could normally lift.
And the mechanics of it kind of reminded me of Half-Life's gravity gun.
Right. And so there's certain surfaces you can't climb. And this came in handy trying to climb an icy surface as well. I did the same thing. So what I did is I leaned up this 4 or 5 log tall tree that I created, leaned it up against the spikes, and I was easily able to scale the log itself, jump over the spikes, and into the tower I had no business being into. And then the same thing under like an icy plateau. You can't climb the icy plateau. You slip and fall. You fall down. You don't have enough stamina to get up there. But you balance a log against the side of it, you can climb the log just as easy. And all of a sudden, you know. And I guess players are doing a lot of this. They're using the Ultra Hand ability. They say, oh, you've got to... you know, find a way from point A to point B across that chasm. Well, fuck it, I'm going to build a bridge.
Yes, science, bitch!
And so they build these abnormally large bridges with the Ultra Hand ability, the fuse ability, and people are finding workarounds for shit, and it's amazing to listen to some of these, and it's fun for me. It's fun. There's a lot of really interesting game mechanics. I hope they don't patch that stuff out. They're not going to. Yeah. That's a key integral part of the game is the creativity. And that's what I like about this. And you're right. It's got a steep, steep learning curve from Breath of the Wild. I've been playing Breath of the Wild for the last 2-3 weeks trying to get geared up for it, for the release of this game. And so I wanted to steep myself in the mechanics and the gameplay and everything and the world and the lore. And I was ill-prepared. This is just such a different experience. And I don't mean different bad. I mean different as in challenging. Different as in the puzzle solving is much more robust. I mean, yes. In the Breath of the Wild, you had your magnet power, you had your bombs, you had your ice block ability, your great ice blocks, or things like that. You had a couple of different abilities you could play with. In this game, it takes that to the nth degree. You've got these new powers with your Ultra Hand that you have to solve new and inventive problems, and people are coming up with just really ridiculous ways to do that. And I'm here for it. I really am. I got stuck. I'm stuck in a spot right now that I can get out of easily, but I'm like 3/4 of the way done with it, and I feel like leaving it now would be admitting failure.
Never give up. Never surrender.
And so I keep going around. I'm in the fire dungeon. That's not really spoiling anything. There's a fire dungeon. I'm stuck in it. And it's a series of train cars and or mine carts. And you have to keep going up to a level, down a level. You're trying to find the keys to open the main gate. And I keep going around in circles and finding new and inventive ways to launch myself into the lava with a mine cart. with either fans or rockets strapped to the side of them. It's fantastic. It's
like even dumb when I ways to die.
Exactly. I keep thinking that. So the other thing I keep thinking of is I don't know how many of you out there are familiar with the band Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Nick Cave is a He's kind of like a spooky dookie kind of guy. He does a lot of that emo pop, emo goth music. I don't know. How would you classify Nick Cave?
I would say somewhere in between Trent Reznor and Iggy Pop.
That's a good way to think of it. I discovered Nick Cave through one particular song, and I really still only know one particular song it is. It came from the X-Files soundtrack from a long, long, long time ago. Remember the X-Files kids? I do.
I remember. Oh, I remember.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Better Than Ezra had a song on the X-Files soundtrack, which is why I bought it. That's also how I found the song.
I probably know the song then, if I think about it. But this is, the album is called Songs in the Key of X. And one of the songs on this album is called Red Right Hand.
You're one microscopic cog in his catastrophic plan, designed and directed by his red right hand.
And again, it's no spoiler that Link's got this mutilated, messed up zombie arm that he's going around doing all this stuff with. I won't say how he got it, but so the entire time I'm sitting there wandering around and I'm humming in my head Red Right Hand because Link is, and I'm like filking it. I'm creating a new version of it in my head. And I'm talking about Link is running all across this land, fusing things together with his dead right hand. I mean, it's stuck. It's in my head. I can't get rid of it.
Yeah, lodged.
Lodged firmly.
It's a great song.
It is, and it's a great game. And if you haven't had the opportunity to play Tears of the Kingdom, again, we're not spoiling much of the story base here because we don't want to do that. It's still relatively new. I don't mind talking about Breath of the Wild at this point because that's been out forever and a day. But Tears of the Kingdom is still relatively new. We won't spoil that, but it is a fun, fascinating game, and I like the troubleshooting. I like the puzzle-solving aspect of it. It really makes your brain work.
The Ultra Hand part of it, where you can move things around and fuse things together and create new things from stuff in your environment, and sometimes if you don't have the things you need, you can create the things you need using raw materials, which is really fun. But yeah, I think probably the reason why it is as powerful as it is in terms of what it can do in the environment is that it's actually only as good as your brain. Mm-hmm. If you can think of a way to put things together in a way that makes sense, then you could probably make some fun end runs around some weird problem solving. Like, I did the same thing you did. There was a snowy section, and I kept on trying to climb the walls, and I kept on slipping down, and I thought, So I just chopped down a couple of trees and fused a couple logs together and just used as a ladder to get up.
Ultra tree.
It makes you think. Yeah, it makes you think like that. And there are some of the shrines, which also make that's also not a spoiler, that come back from Breath of the Wild, where they're just kind of self-contained puzzle dungeons, and you go in there and use the skills you've learned so far to kind of figure out how to get back out. There's usually not enemies in there unless it's a battle challenge. Sometimes there are environmental hazards, like fire or spikes or whatever, but yeah, for the most part, they're just really little restful sections where you can go in there and use the environment to, and what you're provided and your abilities to kind of solve a puzzle, get out, get a little prize, and then run back into the world. And those are really fun in Breath of the Wild, and I'm enjoying them in Tears of the Kingdom as well.
For sure. I like the puzzle. It's like I said, it's frustrating at times. And that's what we talked about with Breath of the Wild. It's a fun game, but it's just challenging enough to make you want to punch the screen every now and again.
Yep.
Kind of the same thing with this game, so I'm enjoying it. I'm glad that it's on the Switch, because I could take my Switch to work with me and continue to get lost in dungeons while I'm at work, so that's always fun. I think I am at a point where I'm about to give up on this, the fire dungeon for now. I need more hearts. I don't have enough to be dealing with this, and my patience is running thin, so it's about time to go back up to the overworld and find some more shrines, so...
Yeah, hearts are super grindy to get, but
yeah,
you know, at least they're fun. The process through which you earn them is a fun one, but it takes time. You can't just cheese this one. You can't just, you know, there's no workaround. There's workarounds and end runs for puzzles, but not for leveling. That takes time, and it takes a lot of spelunking and a lot of running around in discovery, and And I'm finding the pace of progress to be a lot slower in this game than what Breath of the Wild was. But I'm kind of here for it. I mean, it lets me know, because, I mean, like you said, if you're going to pay $70 for a game, not that length of a game necessarily dictates quality, but if you're buying a Zelda game, it's developed in-house by Nintendo. These games go back almost 40 years. They're all fucking fantastic. So you know you're getting a good game, but the difficulty of grinding, of trying to level up to the point where, like you said, I need more hearts to take on the fire dungeon. I'm not strong enough yet. And there's also a very early experience that you have that ties hearts to strength and being able to progress to new areas, which I also won't spoil. But it's really interesting the way they've got things laid out. But yep. If you're going to pay $70 for a game, the glacial pace of progress and the draw distances, especially up in the air, that let you see just how vast this environment is, really lets you know, hey, kid, you're going to get your money's worth out of this game. You're going to play that shit out of this. It's going to be one of those ones that you probably spend, you know, 4 to 6 or even 8 months in, depending on how often you're able to get back to it and keep on chugging away at it. But yeah, there's a lot to explore in this game. It is a very worthy successor to Breath of the Wild. And if you own a Switch and you're into open world or RPG games and you haven't picked this one up yet, then you really need to get on the stick and grab this thing for yourself. It's fantastic so far.
Absolutely. I agree with you completely. It's fun. It's puzzle solving. It's frustrating. It's everything you need in a game. So,
and it's pretty. I mean, even on a console that is kind of like doesn't even try to compete on a graphical level with its contemporaries, the Switch is. I got mine in 2018. I mean, we're coming on 5-6 years old on this console now. But this just proves that you can release a game well into, if not even late into, a given console's shelf life. And you can still, I mean, hell, Grand Theft Auto 5, people forget, came out on the Xbox 360. And PlayStation 4.
Still getting, you know, spit out. They're still spitting out copies for PS5 and Xbox Series X and all that stuff. So, I mean, just give us...
Yeah, here we are, a whole generation
already.
And a half later.
Give us 6 already. Yeah. Come on.
Which, you know, as a very tiny side tangential grind my gears moment, I get a little annoyed with that. Because, obviously, money is what motivates game development, not so much demand. And Rockstar are under development on Grand Theft Auto 6, but they're taking their goddamn sweet fucking time with it, because Grand Theft Auto 5, which again is a game that came out in 2013, it is 10 years old now, this game, one of the last big games to come out, and the generation before last, as it was winding down, they'd already announced the new consoles, they were coming out, I think it was August, and the new ones came out in September, October, so it was, it's just a very, very old game, but because Grand Theft Auto 5 multiplayer is still so robust on their platform, and because they're able to trickle out tiny little things like cars and outfits and weaponry and things like that that people are willing to spend real world microtransaction money on, their incentive to finish Grand Theft Auto 6, it's never been this long between GTA games, we'll just say that. And the reason why is because they're able to keep on milking the cash cow of multiplayer on the last version of the game, so hopefully we'll get it this console generation, but they need to step on it. They do.
Maybe.
I'm not getting any younger, and my game time is starting to wane. I'm still trying to finish Burning Shores, Horizon Forbidden West. I'm still trying to finish Hi-Fi Rush. You know, it's I just got a lot of games that I'm kind of mixing up right now, and
I just kind of stick all the other games back to the side now because I'm playing this one. So
yeah,
and like I said, that's why I'm glad that it comes out on the Switch, because I can take it with me to work, and usually I carry my 3DS to work with me, and I'll be playing any number, because like I've got like several thousand games on each of my 3DSs at this point, so I can literally play whatever I want. But I find myself taking the Switch to work with me now, and I've got the OLED Switch, so you know it looks good. So it's just a good it's a fun experience. It's a really good handheld, and I really enjoy the system. That said, I did have a little bit of a gripe, and I wanted to see if you share this gripe. And again, this isn't a spoiler. When you're in the Sky Islands, right?
Yes.
It's very brightly lit because you're in the sky.
Yeah.
I couldn't see my map for shit. On my 60-inch TV, I couldn't see my waypoint markers on the little map, the tiny one that's on the screen at all times. I could barely read that thing. Did you have that problem at all? I mean, you're
sitting considerably
closer to your TV.
Yeah. I did a little bit. I did notice that I have the brightness on my my actual Switch, if I'm using it in portable mode, dialed down a little bit in order to preserve battery life. But I have the brightness on my TV up pretty good. And first and foremost, I'm very old, and my eyes aren't quite starting to go yet. But if I don't get enough sleep, I kind of have a blurry day once in a while.
Yeah.
But I did notice that I didn't turn down the brightness on the TV so much, but I did dick with some of the contrast on the game mode of my TV, the game mode settings of it, in order to be able to see better. But yeah, it's very like, it has that kind of overexposed effect like a lot of games have when you're playing like in desert sections where all the contrast between the tones is just dialed down and everything's super white and bright and washed out looking. On the handheld version of the game, I did have a little bit of a hard time seeing the map and the HUD, but once I put it up on the TV and dipped with the contrast a little bit, things did become a little easier. But yeah, that is something that I did notice. I just I kind of thought it was me, but apparently not.
No, it's not just you. It's definitely not just you. I just wanted to make sure because I mean I don't want to, you know, shake my fist at the sky. And I mean, like you said, I'm old, and sometimes it's harder to see things as well. So,
okay. But it's, you know, I sympathize with Nintendo because they have the impossible task of like people are going to play this on giant 4K TVs. And they're also going to play this on the tiny little handheld version of the console, and they could be working with the older screen. So we have to make sure that we make this game with an eye towards it looking legible in both formats, and they do a fantastic job with that much. I mean, if you're playing it handheld or on the big screen, everything is proportional and pretty easy to read. You'd never be able to, I know they have a version of The Witcher 3 on the Switch, I know that, but I just remember how fussy and tiny the fonts were and how messy, but complicated the resource management and inventory system were in that game, in Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. And I thought, how in the hell are they going to put that on the Switch without blowing everything up to the point where it's going to take up the entire screen? But Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom both have a very similar interface when it comes to that. And they've done a really fantastic job making sure that everything is largely as, you know, ergonomic and legible as it can be, no matter which size screen you're using with it.
All right. So it's not just me.
Just
a minor gripe, but other than that, I've been really enjoying the game. I think it's a great deal of fun, and I'm looking forward to still continuing to dive into it, get lost, and save the princess, as it were. So,
yeah.
News-wise, I didn't have a whole lot that I wanted to address today. There was one thing that popped up that kind of irritated me. And I don't know if it irritated me for the right reasons or the wrong reasons, so I'll let you be the judge on that. But as we all know, we've talked about, first of all, the fact that Disney can't help themselves but just remake all of their animated movies as live-action movies. We've talked about that ad nauseum. It's an annoying trend, but it's going to happen because, hey, there's money in them there stones. Let's squeeze it out. So,
yeah,
we've talked about the upcoming Little Mermaid remake. In regards to backlash over racial casting and things like that, and just really dumb tone deaf bullshit. But
dumb,
it's near
tone deaf bullshit.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So we're coming up on the release date for that here very, very soon. They've already started to do projections for how much this is going to make opening weekend, and they're saying it's projected to make anywhere between 110 to 130 million during its opening weekend. Which, as an opening weekend, is a success by anybody's metrics, you would think. You would think. Again, we talked about how much a movie has to make to be deemed a commercial critical success at this point, but
Hollywood accounting is very draconian.
Yes.
Byzantine.
When we talk about a lot about celebrities who get on social media and open their mouths and say things they probably shouldn't have, or get canceled for the dumb shit that they say, and it seems like this might, like initially when I read the article, I thought this was another case of that. But I kind of fall the other direction on this now, and I kind of want to get your take on it. Star of the Aladdin remake, the live action mm-hmm. Aladdin, with Will Smith's Giant Blue Genie.
Yes.
Aladdin star Mena Masood. Am I saying that correctly? Mena Masood? Whatever. Played Aladdin. Has taken to Twitter and said, in regards to Aladdin, he said, "Our film was unique in that audiences went to watch it multiple times. It's the only way we reached the $1 billion mark with our opening. My guess is Little Mermaid doesn't cross the billion mark, but will undoubtedly get a sequel." Not that inflammatory a statement. It's a little humble braggy. But
yeah, it's a little bit trash talky. It's a little bit, you know, throwing some shade like on the basketball court. It's a, you know,
but
you,
it's not like he's
team, but it's
he's not like he's racially baiting her. He's not like he's like
no
saying this is terrible acting or this is a dumb idea. He's not clowning on it at all. He's just kind of humble bragging and saying, well, you know, it's no Aladdin, you know.
But my movie was great. It made a lot of money, and you know, I mean, that's a little bit egotistical, but it's not cancel worthy, I wouldn't think.
You would think that, but now he has taken himself off of Twitter because of the backlash he's received from this. Quotes like, "Your film reached a billion, but you're still jobless. Seems like you got other things to worry about." Or, "Mena Masood chose violence with that comment about the Little Mermaid's box office, and now TLM stands are coming after him." Or, "Mena Masood, you're pea-green with envy because your CGI monster snooze-fest of a very bastardized Aladdin made $1 billion, got forgotten, and you were never cast in anything meaningful again. Halle Bailey is a true star, and The Little Mermaid is about to eclipse everything." This backlash reminds me of, like Taylor Swift fans. You know what I'm talking about? And I don't mean to be derogatory. Yeah. I don't hate on Taylor Swift like a lot of people do. Of course, I'm a metalhead. That's not really my scene. That's not really my music. But all music is music to me, to one very degree.
All due respect to Taylor, what she does resonates with a pretty big audience, and that means it has value. And even if it's not for me, that doesn't mean it's not for a lot of people who really love it. And music is completely subjective, and you should like what you like.
Right, but even you just saying that right now, I guarantee you, if you had the audience, the Taylor Swift fans would come after you with full force, guns blazing, because how dare you impugn Taylor Swift?
I didn't.
Exactly. And it's exactly what's going on here. Mena Masood was braggy and a little bit cringy, but he was not trashing...
A little bit arrogant.
He wasn't trashing Halle Bailey. He wasn't trashing The Little Mermaid. All he was doing was hyping himself up a little bit. And yeah, maybe it's because, you know, he's still on that... I mean, you make $1 billion in one of your first movie outings, you kind of get a big head about yourself. So, I mean, I get it. But he didn't say anything cancelable. And I want to say that, yes, I am the dreaded W word. I am woke. And I really hate that people use that as a slur these days or as a bastardization. It's not. It just means that I'm aware of other people's suffering.
Yes. I mean, the whole, you know, Florida thing, which we'll get to in earnest in a second, because I have something I want to bring up for sure. But that don't say woke and don't be woke and Florida's where woke goes to die. And this bastardization of the idea of being woke as something that's bad. It's like when the conservatives seized on education as being elitist, you know? I mean, it's not good for their brand if people are compassionate, if people are empathetic, if people are able to take themselves out of their own experience and put themselves in the shoes of somebody else and see things compassionately. And I keep seeing this lately, especially the last couple of days, this kind of meme. And again, memes are always just pithy bumper sticker bullshit, but sometimes there's a nugget of wisdom to be found at the center of them. But the idea that I see a lot expressed is that if you're a conservative, Republican, whatever you want to call it, if you're right-wing, your idea and your attitude is, what about me? Whereas if you're a left-wing, liberalist, or woke, your idea is, but what about them? The fact that we care about other people, and we actually are able to and willing to maybe sacrifice a little bit of our own personal comfort or resources in order to make sure that everybody has a little something to be able to survive on, food, shelter, clothing, that kind of thing. It's not a radical idea, and it's not extremist, but it's been characterized that way. Right. By people who are turning woke into a slur, just like they did leftist, and just like they did you know, with education by contrasting that and making it something that is viewed as bad because it serves their base. This is, again, not controversial. This is something that is has been proven many, many times over, but they've studied and tried to see if liberal and conservative brains are different, and they are. And conservative, you're more likely to be conservative if you lack compassion. You're more likely to be conservative if you have a lower IQ. Let's just be really honest about it. people who aren't able to sympathize with other people and who are a little bit on the dumb side tend to vote not for themselves, but against others. We'll just say that. And that's something that's pretty chronic, and it's not a new thing. I'm not breaking any ground or making any news with that statement. That's just kind of the way things are. But the fact that they've recontextualized woke as being bad just because it means caring about other people and wanting what's best for everyone, again, it's just like, well, they like people stupid because the dumber they are, the more likely they are to vote Republican. So let's demonize education. It's just, it's so transparent if you have the brains to be able to see through what they're doing and to be able to wave your hand around them, dispel the smoke show a little bit. And take down the mirrors, and it's just you can see what they're doing, but because they understand that their base tends to be on the dumber side, and can't really see that they're not able to dispel the smokescreen and figure out what's going on behind the scenes, they count on that, and
maybe dumb is the wrong word. Maybe just easily manipulated.
Yeah. You know what? That's fair. I'll give them that. But, just because these people are more likely to be their base, they pander to them. And it's just sad to me to see, because I can see right through it. I know what's going on. But if somebody wasn't easily manipulatable into, hey, stop paying attention to the hoard of gold I'm sitting on. Look at that guy. He's trying to steal your piece of gold. They fall for it every time. It's like Lucy pulling away the football and Charlie Brown. It's just really sad to watch. Like, I was working at a sporting goods catalog during both elections where Obama got voted in. And the chatter on the internet, oh, you better buy guns and ammo now because he's going to take your guns away. He's a leftist. He's a black man. That means he's going to take your guns away. And the idiots believed it, and we couldn't keep ammunition in stock. We were backordered a month and a half on ammunition in the sporting goods catalog. And they told I had nothing to do with sales or merchandising, but because it was a company-wide issue, they told us about this in the department meetings I had with the catalog production team. And, he's going to take your guns. Get him now. So people were buying up anything firearm-related they could get their dirty little hands on from every source they possibly could, including us, and everybody was backlogged for months and months. So then when it didn't happen, when Obama during his entire first term did not even head fake in the direction of trying to take the guns away, like everybody said, I figured, well, they all got played for fools, they're suckers, they're not going to fall for that again. And then just like clockwork, the second time he ran and was in the lead and going to be getting voted in over Mitt Romney, he's going to take your guns away. You better get all the guns you can. And we started getting backlogged in ammunition again. And I thought, you dumb motherfuckers. Oh, he's got nothing to lose. It's his second term. He can't run for re-election. So he doesn't have to pander to anybody. He's going to do it this time for sure. And Lucy pulls away the football. And Charlie Brown comes crashing down on his lumbar. And they fall for it again. So you're being charitable because you're a kinder person than I am, you know, by saying easily manipulated. I'm going to cotton to that. And I'm going to say, yes, easily manipulated. That is a thing. But, you know, I shouldn't really back down from the dumb thing, because if you're not somebody who can learn from experience, if you're not somebody who has the emotional intelligence to be able to step outside your own experience and sympathize with somebody else, then I don't have a whole lot of time for you and your ignorance. I can't help you.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's something wrong with it. And again, like I said, I don't take woke as a slur. Like most people are, no. You're a liberal. So yeah, I am liberal. Look up the definition of the word. You know, you're woke. Yeah, I am aware of other people's suffering. And I am aware of other people outside of my own life. But the fact is there's too many people rushing to try and... They blame cancel culture on the woke. Like, we're always trying to cancel all the right-wing stuff. We're trying to cancel guns and cancel Tucker Carlson and cancel Rush Limbaugh and cancel this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, nah, it's not what we're doing. We're trying to hold people accountable. And so they blame a lot of that on the liberals. But a lot of that comes back towards the right side of the fence as well. There's definitely the same kind of thing going on where if you're woke, you go broke, you know? And so there's a lot of backlash about that.
What's so dumb to me is that the same people, the Venn diagram of people who freaked out about Dylan Mulvaney, the trans woman, being on a Bud Light can, and the people who freaked out when they took Aunt Jemima off of the pancake mix is a circle. They're the same people.
What? No.
You know, oh, you snowflakes, why'd you get Uncle Ben canceled? And why is there a man on my Bud Light can who's wearing lipstick? Come the fuck on. Which leads me to the last thing that I want to talk about as far as a news item. I'll make this fast. I know I have a tendency to ramble, but this is from CNN. And this, again, goes back to like the Florida thing that I said we're going to come back to. Florida teacher says she is under investigation after showing fifth grade class Disney movie with a gay character. Oh, now, the whole don't say gay and don't say woke thing that actually got passed in the Florida legislature, where teachers can be investigated, fired, and possibly even prosecuted for doing anything they don't like, and that's a moving goalpost, by reminding kids that gay people exist and maybe we should be nice to them because they deserve human rights. So the article says,
God forbid.
A fifth grade teacher said she's being investigated by the Florida Department of Education after she showed her students Strange World, a 2022 animated Disney movie featuring a character who is biracial and gay, which is a double whammy for conservatives. Jenna Barbie is a teacher in Hernando County's Winding Waters K-8 school. I am the teacher that's under investigation with the Florida Department of Education for indoctrination for showing a Disney movie, Barbie said in a TikTok over the weekend. In the post, Barbie explained she played the Disney film to a class which was partially full after a day of standardized testing. She also said she had previously signed permission slips from all the parents allowing the students to watch a movie rated PG. According to Barbie, a parent then complained and reported her to the State Department of Education. The parent who reported her, who is also a member of the Hernando County School District Board, complained to the principal about the movie not being appropriate for students, according to Karen Jordan, spokesperson for Hernando County Schools. Jordan also provided CNN with a copy of the announcement from the school district to parents. So, basically, this person is complaining that there's a non-straight, non-white character in a Disney movie, which, again, Disney movie! I mean, Florida's war on Disney, which is largely spurred by Ron DeSantis and his fucking abject ignorance, this isn't really related to it, but it kind of is, because like we said about, you know, being woke or being liberal or being whatever, the fact that the right is able to demonize this stuff in the culture and paint it as being not patriotic...
And that it works.
Means that they have a... Yeah, they have a very broad brush with which they can impugn the reputations and actions of anybody who does a thing they don't like. I can't truck with this shit. I really can't. I have no idea. They're going to lose. I understand this because I know that what they're doing is the death throes. Because younger generations, as we've discussed before, are not generally turning conservative the way previous generations did. And the dinosaurs who want to push hatred and bigotry and discrimination as policy are really starting to get squeezed out. So they're trying to consolidate and conserve their power by things like gerrymandering and creating these laws where you can't respect people. You literally can't respect people by law, or you could be hauled up on that, this fascist bullshit. And they're doing this because they see their waning influence. They see that they are a movement that's dying. Their worldview is getting pushed out and will get pushed out. So they're just like Lake Mead in Nevada that gets lower and lower and lower with the water levels, but the sediment inside and the bodies start to pop up and things get much denser and much more concentrated.
That's a real good analogy, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're dying. They're a dying party. Their worldview is being pushed out. They know it, so they're trying to just plant as many flags in the sand as they retreat up the beach. As they possibly can to remind people of their agenda of hatred and, hey, we were here, and creating these Gordian knots of legislation that it's going to require massive untangling to set straight again once they're out of power. But they're not going easily. They're not going down without a fight, and that sucks. But here we are.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, all we can do is kind of hold our ground and stay woke, I guess. I don't know. I don't use that as an insult, but all we can do is just keep holding the ground and letting compassion win and being compassionate and being accepting with the people. Now, back to the story with Mina Musad. I don't think Mina Musad deserves to be canceled.
No.
He's just braggy. He's young. He had a hit movie. I want to say it was one of his first acting gigs out. And
yeah,
he scored with it. And $1 billion is a huge milestone. And he has every right to be proud of that. And he didn't say anything to impugn Halle Bailey's character. He didn't say anything to impugn the movie at all. So, whatever. Go easy on the kid. Jesus Christ, let him alone. Haven't we seen what this kind of negativity does to people like Rosemary Tran and like Ahmed Best and people like that? When you bully these people off of social media, you're creating just this hate-filled swirling mass, and you're just contributing to just negativity, man. I ain't got no time for that anymore.
He's not Andrew Tate, for Christ's sake.
Right. Andrew Tate got taken down by Greta Thunberg. So, I mean, if you're like an alpha male...
That will never not be funny to me.
The quote-unquote alpha male of alpha males, and you get taken down by a teenage girl, you pretty much are the least alpha of all the alphas.
If you wrote that plot twist into a movie, nobody would believe you.
No. That said, I do love Greta Thunberg. I think she's amazing. And I think Andrew Tate's disgusting. Same. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Sometimes the bad guys actually do lose. It's important to remember that.
I'm enjoying watching that downfall of his. It's been spectacular. Not the point of the podcast today. We do want to remind you, however, I wouldn't say this is the beginning anymore, but before we get to the main abject topic of the conversation, I want to remind everybody that this is not ever intended to be a one-way conversation between Jim and I, or myself and myself, or Jim and himself. We do talk to ourselves quite a lot.
Yes, we do.
It's when we answer ourselves that is really disturbing.
What do you want, you crazy bitch?
Again,
well, you know, Yeah.
This is never meant to be a one-way conduit of conversation. We, of course, need to involve you. We always want to hear your opinions, your thoughts. And there's a couple of different ways you can do that. You can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/FeelYourFandom. Or you can find us in our email, which is FeelYourFandom@gmail.com.
And the backup Gmail address from which we just heard from Smo.
Yeah.
What up, Smo? Who took us to task, and rightly so, about being too fast and loose with spoilers. I mean, people have busy schedules, they can't get to things, so we're a lot more careful about that now, and we appreciated that a lot. But we're going to bring Smo on as a guest coming up pretty soon, and we're going to talk about an undisclosed topic, but we'll figure that out. And he hit us up on our backup email address at fyftalentbooking@gmail.com. If you want to find us on Instagram, we're at FuelYourFandom. We're on what's left of Twitter, although they do have a new CEO now, so who knows, anything goes. Could be interesting again. @fuel_your. And as ever, you can find us any place fine podcasts are bought, stolen, traded, or sold, including Spotify, Audible, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, any place you find fine podcasts. We're going to be there, and we love snuggling up in your little ear holes. We appreciate your patronage, and thanks for listening.
We do indeed enjoy it. It's warm and cozy. But that is where we're at, and kind of what I wanted to talk about today is there's been a rash of things happening lately in this category. You'll know as soon as I say it. That kind of disturbed me. And Jim and I have both been avid fans of YouTube. We've used it since it's come out, since its inception. It's a great way to learn how to caulk a bathtub if you need to learn how to caulk a bathtub, or, you know, cook a perfect steak. Or you can learn anything in the world on YouTube. Yeah. And it's fantastic for entertainment. I have a cable cutter. I haven't had cable for a long, long time. That Same. Said, I have all of the streaming services now, so I'm just as bad as I used to be. But for a long time, I got most of like my news input, my everything else, all of my world content from YouTube. And ever since finding YouTube Premium, boy, I can't go back. That commercial free is the way to be. But
yeah, as much as they pester you about that with, hey, you should subscribe to YouTube Premium, I finally broke down and did it, and
worth it.
In terms of overall percentage of time that I spend watching YouTube versus many of the other streaming services, that's one that I probably won't ever cancel.
Worth it. Absolutely. But one of the biggest stars on YouTube, and I don't think this is hyperbolic. I don't think this is selling it short in any fashion.
I think he's got the number two. He's number two in terms of overall subscribers behind PewDiePie, I think.
Right. And that, of course, is Jimmy Donaldson, a.k.a. Mr. Beast. Now, you don't have to be a fan of Mr. Beast to know of Mr. Beast. He's everywhere. And he's,
my mom knows of Mr. Beast.
For real. He's been on YouTube for years. He's a mainstay. He's a long-standing member. And he's easily written off, if you've only seen some of his earlier videos, as stunt videos. You know, I spent 24 hours locked in a prison cell, or, you know, I spent a week on an island, or I counted... Yeah, really goofy, not pranks, but just kind of, you know, skits and dumb things, kids things. It's comedy. It's fun. He has a team of people that he has around him at all times, and they do these videos. These videos are very well produced. They're very well edited. Yeah. They're shot really well. They look good.
They're broadcast worthy.
They take time, and you can tell that he puts the time, effort, and cash into making these movies and or these videos. Excuse me. But the thing is, there's a lot more to Mr. Beast than meets the eye. Because if you start watching, like, sequentially, it's like, yes, okay, here's a video where he tries to stop a car using magnets, or tow a vehicle using RC cars, things like that, silly shit. But then you'll see him go and do giveaways. He'll go to, like, a Walmart and have a briefcase with $10,000 in it. And he'll just go, hey, do you know who Mr. Beast is? Yeah, I know who Mr. Beast is. Are you subscribed to Mr. Beast? Yeah, I'm subscribed to Mr. Beast. Here's $10,000. Or, you know, just go up to random people who look like they're in need and give them money. One of my favorite videos that Jimmy did was I bought out a grocery store.
Hey, Mr. Beast here. Today we're going to buy every item in this store. Let's do it.
And this was right around the time that he formed his charitable organization. Mr. Beast created a charity called Beast Philanthropy. And that's where his goal is to help end world hunger. And he bought out this grocery store. And it looked like a typical grocery outlet, kind of a, not necessarily like an upper tier. Like, this wasn't like a Safeway or a Walmart or anything like that. But he goes into this grocery store and he bought everything. Everything shelf stable, yeah. I should say, he bought. Anything that would spoil, he left. Like, he didn't do a whole lot in the way of the meats or the vegetables or things like that. He bought all of the non-perishable items. And then you could see them loading them into U-Hauls. And they drove, like, it was like 10 or 12 U-Haul trucks full of stuff from this grocery store that was empty by the time they finished. It was bare bones. And he donated it all to food banks. And it's,
yeah, which not only helped out a small business, but it helped out people who needed food.
Yeah, for sure. And so once you get past the goofiness and the shallowness of some of the stunt videos, you realize deep underneath there's this core of generosity and caring and giving. And so you see a lot of these things. He's gone on to... he gave $1 million, $1 million. He did a series of videos leading up to this where you could win an ever-increasing amount of money, and then if you won that challenge, you stayed on for the next one. And then the ultimate winner of all of these challenges got $1 million. Or, you know,
yeah,
keep your hand on this vehicle. The last person to take their hand off the vehicle wins the vehicle. Simple shit like that. He bought up a car dealership, a used car dealership.
That's my favorite one of his. The car dealership is my favorite video of his, for sure.
I bought every single car at a car dealership.
Can we afford this? I really don't know. Well, that's reassuring.
And gave away, basically, every car. It's like, oh, do you need a car? Yeah, we'll pay you to take this car. Here's $200. Now take this car and get out of here. You know,
this car's $1. Do you have $1? And it's like a three-row SUV. So people were driving by and pulling into this car lot, this big sale, and they came, yeah, I'm looking for a car today. I don't really have, like, a huge budget, but I need, you know, I got to get my kids to school and get back and forth to work and everything. And he's like, okay, well, this car is I give you $5, and then you take the car.
These are the 12 cars. I just bought them. And now that I've spent over $100,000 on cars, I need to reprice them because they were way too expensive.
This car is $3, $7, $2. This car, we pay you $1,000 to buy, and this car is $4.20. Do not get it confused.
That's a great price.
This car is $69. This car is going to my stepdad, $10.99, not $99.
And this, the disbelief on people's faces, because as we're all sort of like struggling through this dystopian nightmare, late-stage capitalism hellscape, we're all struggling, and the idea that you can't get something for nothing, there's no free lunch, there's always a catch, watch out for scams, people are very suspicious. But when they see this crew of people who are just smiling, and they're holding out the keys and saying, hey, this car is yours, I'll give you $1,000 to take this car, this car is 50 cents, and just the... No, I'm really not kidding. This car is 50 cents. The ability that he has to change lives is incredible. He teamed up with Mark Rober, who is another fantastic content creator on YouTube that I love a lot, who teaches kids about science. He's a retired NASA engineer, and he yep. does fun things like create squirrel obstacle courses in his backyard.
That's my favorite. And the glitter bombs were my favorite.
Yeah, and the holiday glitter bombs, if you watch those videos, that was Mark Rober. Jimmy Donaldson, Mr. Beast, teamed up with Mark Rober to raise $30 million to help clean up ocean garbage.
I'm going to attempt to collect 30 million pounds of trash from this river all by myself. But there's a catch, because Mr. Beast and his boys and a butt ton of volunteers are going to try and beat me to it by collecting 30 million pounds of trash from this beach. Now, I know what you're thinking. Psh, Mark, 1 versus 1,000 hardly seems like a fair fight. And you'd be right, except for one minor detail I neglected to mention. I actually do have one other teammate who just so happens to be a floating 50-ton trash-eating robot.
Or what about Team Trees? You remember Team Trees?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. He started a hashtag Team Trees with the goal of planting 20 million trees before 2020.
You guys spammed me to plant 20 million trees on Twitter, Reddit, all over my comment section, so I made it happen. Today, we will be planting 20 million trees.
He raised $20 million for this in just 2 months.
Yeah.
And to me, this is just really inventive, because this guy has a lot of money because he started making money on YouTube from creating interesting videos. And then once he had all this money, he thought, this is more money than I need. I'm going to start giving away some of this money, and maybe that could be an interesting video. And then philanthropy and generosity kind of became this guy's brand. The videos where he like runs up to people with a suitcase full of money and gives it to them in a Walmart. The thing that got to me, the reason that I thought this might be, I mean, this is your idea for this subject, but I thought it'd be a great idea to talk about it, because this guy, for all of his philanthropy and all of his charity and all of his just downright goodness, is actually a controversial figure.
Yeah. People it's don't dumb like that him. He's controversial. And I give it to you like this. I have subscribed to Mr. Beast since I discovered him. I like watching his videos. You know, you always have that pipe dream that you'll get called up to do one of his dumb stunts, even though I'm far too old.
Yeah.
Jimmy, don't do it. I'm too old. But my kids like watching his videos, and the fact of the matter is the fact that he is controversial is really ridiculous. Now, there's been a number of stunts that he's pulled recently, and I can say stunts in quote marks, because they're kind of ever escalating in frequency and impressiveness. He gave a waitress a car as a tip. I want to say it was a electric car. Was it like a Tesla or something like that?
It was a Tesla, yeah.
Yeah. He gave her it as a tip. And people are bitching at him about the fact that, did you even think about the fact that she has to pay taxes on that? And how is she going to afford the taxes on that? It's like, bro, if you give a guy who doesn't have a car, you're a bad guy? I don't get it. I don't understand. There was a video where he tipped a pizza guy a house. Because this guy didn't have a house. He didn't have a place to live with his family. Not a stable place to live, anyways. And he gave this guy a house. A fully furnished house.
I just bought this house, and I'm going to give it to Chandler.
Really?
No, bruh. But I am going to give it to a pizza delivery guy. And here's how. We ordered a pizza.
Found a pizza. I
can
help you.
Can I have a pepperoni delivery, please? Then we paid a pizza delivery guy to help us move furniture all day.
We just need help moving furniture. If we were to give you a few $1,000, could you just help us move furniture all day? Really?
All we told him is that we are YouTubers and we needed an extra hand moving furniture because our friend Chad got laid off and we really wanted to help him. But little does he know, Chad isn't real. At the end of the day, we would actually give him 100% ownership of the house he is helping us move furniture into.
Great!
Got him.
And people are gonna shit on Mr. Beast because of this? That doesn't make any sense to me. And then, I'll let you talk about the big one here. Go ahead.
Well, this is the one that really perplexed me. How anybody could give him shit about this. This is an article I'm reading from USA Today today.
Right. Today?
And this is the one that really grabbed today. This is actually from February of this year. But I'm reading it today. The headline is, a YouTuber cured 1,000 blind people for a video. But is it performative altruism?
I cried watching this video. 1,000 blind people's
lives were changed. Yeah, I so cried. Did I. So did I. 1,000 blind people's lives were changed thanks to the world's biggest YouTuber, Mr. Beast. The, and this is important, 24-year-old content creator, whose real name is Jimmy Donaldson, is known for his generous and charitable endeavors.
Yep.
He's rebuilt homes for Kentucky tornado survivors and given $20,000 to randomly selected people in need. This time, he paid for a simple 10-minute eye surgery for 1,000 patients who couldn't afford it, giving some their vision back and helping others see clearly for the first time in years. On top of that, Donaldson also gifted various things to participants in the video, including a $50,000 college fund check and a brand new Tesla. Now, somewhere along the line, Jimmy Donaldson read that cataracts are one of the leading causes of blindness, but one of the most easily corrected by surgery, but it's an underperformed surgery because a lot of the time, either insurance doesn't cover it, or even with insurance, it's too expensive. So he said, I'm going to cure blindness in 1,000 people. And then he did that. But because he filmed it in order to put it on his channel to generate more views and therefore more money to do more nice things for more people, people are like, oh, you exploited those people. You're rich, so you just decided you're going to wave your hand and change somebody's life. First of all, fuck you. Second, how often, these are the same people, again, just like the conservatives with the Bud Light can and the Aunt Jemima, it's a circle. The same people who are saying, oh, we need to overtax the rich, so the people like Elon Musk and Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos have to pay their fair share for social services. We have to tax these people. We have to redistribute the wealth a little bit. Why aren't they, you know, Elon Musk could cure, he could fix the water problem in Flint for, you know, what he makes in 6 hours at his company. Mm-hmm. Why are they wasting money going to space? So then you have an actual person who doesn't have billions by most stretches, but does have millions and millions of dollars, and he constantly generates this money. And rather than keep it for himself and just go live on an island someplace and be like a rich little dick, he is reinvesting that money back into happiness.
Yeah.
He's taking the proceeds from whatever he sells in merchandise and whatever he gets from YouTube and the views, and he folds that money back into personally changing people's lives.
Yeah.
He paid for all this cataract surgery, and he also just recently in the last week or two came under fire because he bought a neighborhood. Now he's in Asheville or Greenville, North Carolina, South Carolina, somewhere out there.
I wanted to mention this one too, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Yeah.
He bought a neighborhood for his family, his friends, his coworkers, the people that he works with. He wanted everyone to have a place to live, a stable place to live. So he started buying houses in this cul-de-sac in this neighborhood. And I think he's got them all except for one.
Quietly behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's not asking anyone for anything for it. He's just giving them houses, giving them a place to live so they don't have to worry about it. And people are accusing him of creating, quote-unquote, a company town. Like back in the day when there was like mining companies and logging companies who would have a town.
Hershey, Pennsylvania.
And Hershey, Pennsylvania. But you know, they create these towns where these people are trapped because you live in the town, you work in the town, your money goes back into the town. It's like a cyclical thing you can't get out of. And people started accusing Beast of that, and that's not the case. That can't be the case, because he's not a company like that. His company is just, they make videos. And he's just, I don't know, content creations like that, it's not the same thing. It's not on the same level. And in fact, he started getting some hate again this week, for God's sakes. He did the same thing with that he did for the cataract surgery. He went around and gave 1,000 deaf people state-of-the-art hearing aids worth up to $3 million in total. He helped 1,000 people hear.
Now, I love that, because if he's got to be aware that he's getting raked over the coals. Oh, you cured 1,000 blind people. That's way, we can verify that Mr. Beast cured more blind people than fucking Jesus. You know, it's verifiable. There's a record of it. It's right. YouTube. And people are still giving him shit. So the fact that he then said, okay, if you're going to get pissed off if you're curing blindness in 1,000 people, guess how much I give a shit about your fucking opinion. I'm going to go ahead and do what I can to cure deafness in 1,000 more. Suck on that, haters. I'm going to keep on spreading joy, wealth, blessings, love, and courtesy and care to the world, whether you fucking like it or not. And there's this ugly undercurrent, too, because, I mean, if you read about people like Tyler Perry, who is also an entertainer and a content creator and makes films, and he's got a studio in Atlanta so that he can employ people that he trusts, that he works with, that are there at his side to help him make the movies that he makes. And nobody's going to bat an eyelash at that because, you know, Tyler Perry, I mean, that's mainstream entertainment. That's movies. That's TV. That's got a level of legitimacy that dirty, scrubby little YouTube, even after almost 20 years on the internet, can only aspire to. But here's this guy, and we haven't even touched on the fact that he's got basically not really a chain of restaurants. They're ghost restaurants. But the Beast Burger chain, where you can go on your DoorDashes and your Uber Eatses, and you can order yourself food that's made in a commercial kitchen, but comes with a branded menu and that kind of thing. The Beast Burger. And he turns all of the profits from that back into fueling the altruism and charity of this empire.
He has a chocolatiering company, too, called Feastables.
Yeah.
And they're all over Walmart and everything. You can find them wherever. I've had a couple of them. They're pretty good. And all of that money gets turned back into this, too. That's where he gets a lot of the money that he gives away, is donatable
I buy
funds.
Paul Newman salad dressing because I know that the profits go to helping feed people and to charity and helping kids. I have not seen the Beast snacks on shelves at my local Walmart lately, but if I do wind up seeing them, I will buy several. Because it's nice to be nice to the nice. It's good to be able to contribute something, even if it's just a small amount, whatever I have left over, whatever the profits are from a candy bar. I know that at least a couple of pennies from that candy bar went into buying somebody a house or giving somebody in need a car or curing a blind person. I mean, yeah, it's the worst sort of like passive slacktivism there is of like, oh, I give to charity or whatever. But the fact that you can actually see the good that whatever you manage to contribute, whether it's views or time or money or whatever you've got, to this this kid who's changing all these lives, then you can turn on your TV or your phone or your computer and go to YouTube and check out, yeah, that's what he did with that money. That's what he's doing with it. He's rolling it forward. And I don't understand how we went from, oh yeah, pay it forward is a really great and altruistic philosophy for how to help people. I've got all this money. If I spend this money to help people, I get more views and then I get more money to help more people. It's just the opposite of a vicious circle. It's just, it's beautiful. And I'm angry. I get angry whenever here's a kid who understood how to monetize what he wanted to do. And the fact that, yes, that does, in the Instagram and YouTube and TikTok generation of time and the timeline, means that you are filming that. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I do have a problem with, all right, like,
they're calling it inspiration porn. They're calling it inspiration porn. And I hate that phrase. I really do.
I can sort of see it. Like, I've definitely seen a couple of videos where there's, like, somebody across the street shooting from a bush or something, and some guy runs up and, like, gives somebody a big chunk of money on the street, and then, like, how do you feel? How does it make you feel? What are you going to do? Does it change your life? What do you do? And they're just, that's a kind of a shitty thing. That feels ambushy. That feels kind of set up if they go and do that kind of thing and film people. Or, like, if you're, I saw a guy who did a TikTok who played a game with a server. And the server, he was at a restaurant, and it was like a, you know, family restaurant, so we're not talking like huge tips. We're talking like checks between 20 and 50 bucks. You're not making, you know, 20% off of a fortune here, like it's fine dining. But this TikToker said, hey, I'm a server, and this happened to me, and you're going to see this video. I'm going to stitch it. I'm going to link to it, and you can see what they did. And it was a couple of wiseacres who went in and like, hey, you want to play a game? You're either going to get a penny for a tip or $1,000. And the server was like, no, I'm not interested. Tip me or don't. I mean, I have other tables. I don't care. But I'm not going to play games for clout, likes, and views and then have an emotional reaction on camera. I'm a server. I have tables. I'm not your dancing monkey. Tip me or don't. I got shit to do.
I like
and these guys were like, boop, boop. Yeah, and that was the first time I became aware of this video, was because the version where the server was responding went viral. That kind of shit feels assholish and ambushy. But when you go in and buy up an entire car dealership and then just put up sale signs and wait for the people to come to you, and there's just a different energy about it the way he does it. And I understand maybe that's a little bit permissive and biased, saying, oh, because I like him, I'm giving him a pass on this performative altruism or this inspiration porn. It just feels different.
It feeds itself. It's
yeah.
He is doing this for clicks and views, because the clicks and views bring in the advertising revenue. The clicks and views bring in the money that enables him to cycle back and do more of this, and do more and more and bigger and bigger. And
he's proven that's what he does.
Right. I mean, I like watching. I don't like the term inspiration porn. I think that cheapens it.
Derogatory. But
I see what you mean, because I watched this guy on TikTok. His name is Just Nate, JustKnate, Just Nate, and he goes up to homeless people and people begging on the streets and asks them what they need, and they'll be like, oh, I'm hungry, so he'll go buy them food, or I need a warm blanket or shoes or a tent or, you know, sleeping bags or whatever. And he takes care of these people. He goes and he buys all this stuff for people. Yes, I'm watching it on a video that he made for his TikTok, but it's the same thing. He's using the attention and advertising and everything that he gets from this video to circulate it back into doing more and bigger things to help people. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a real difference between the people who are quote-unquote performers doing good, like Jimmy Donaldson and his crew, and then doing good performatively. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because
it does.
I think that's the key difference for me is Mr. Beast and his crew are not doing good to get performance. They're not doing good to get clout. They're doing good because they can, because they've got the resources to do it, because of their performances, as opposed to people like those, you know, game show idiots trying to jock the waitress for cash. They're doing it to get the clicks and views. They know that giving $1,000 away will make people go, oh, that's really cool, and click and subscribe and this, that, and the
especially other thing. Especially if whoever is on the receiving end of the charity has a really emotional reaction, which this server again was like, I'm not going to play your fucking game or be your dancing monkey. I'm not.
Yeah.
Tip me or don't, I got tables.
And I think that's the key difference, is you're either performatively donating or you're donating because of your performance. And I think that's where Jimmy falls in. And unfortunately, I say unfortunately as I preface this statement, he's got a big defender in Twitter's Elon Musk.
Ew, no!
Elon Musk jumped to his defense on Twitter against people who are calling it inspiration porn for his 1,000 deaf people here for the first time video that he just released. Elon Musk said, quote, people definitely shouldn't be attacked for doing good. Is it really just a question of money to restore hearing? I'm always looking for ways to donate money that are actually good. Perhaps this is one. It is very hard to donate money if you care about it doing actual good, not merely the appearance of it. And so for once, in a very long time, I agree with Elon.
Well, even a stop clock is right twice a day. I
mean, exactly. You know,
and maybe, I guess also maybe he's in support of that, because when people are talking about this Mr. Beast character and the millions he's donating, they're not talking as much about me and the billions I'm not.
Right. And so if you could spur someone like Elon Musk into donating money in a better way and being more generous and forthcoming and giving, hell,
yeah.
I mean, the Grinch heart grew 3 sizes in that day, you know?
Because a $1 million is life-changing money. Sure would be for you and me, but $1 billion? I mean, people, again, they don't really understand just how far apart a million and a billion are. Because 100 and 1,000 are pretty close. You know, 1,000 and 10,000 are pretty close. But the incremental increases, I think, I remember reading again, like, this is why Jimmy Donaldson's first ever video was, or not first ever video, but first viral video that really made him some money and views was Watch Me Count to a Million. You can count to a million in about 31 hours. And so the video became kind of more like an endurance test because he was fighting off sleep. But he got it done in something like 27. Because he counted very fast at the beginning, it didn't take a lot of breaks. But to count to a billion would take you 31 years. That's where I got 31 from. So you can do it. It the amount of money that is,
mm-hmm.
Is just astronomical and staggering. But, like, again, from the, giving him shit because he's getting footage out of it to then get more money, I don't... This USA Today article makes a really salient point. The 8-minute long video shows several patients undergoing cataract surgeries, having the bandages removed from their eyes and seeing clearly again in a series of emotional clips. One patient named Charlie, whose vision had deteriorated to the point where it made it hard to work as a cashier, peeled off the bandages and read an eye chart with the message, "You just won $10,000. Jeremiah, a teenager who had been blind in one eye since age 4, saw everything in the room, including a $50,000 check for college. And a father, who said he just wanted to see his son again, says his post-op vision still was a little blurry, but only because of the tears in his eyes." And people are giving him shit for this.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I mean, here's the thing. Jimmy is doing good. He's found a platform that allows him to make revenue and get views and get eyeballs that in turn make him get more revenue, his ad revenue, his Feastables revenue, his Mr. Beast Burger revenue, Team Trees, things like that. He's found a platform that enables him to gather up resources. And he's found a way to be altruistic with his resources. Now, it's really easy to see someone like Mr. Beast become someone like Logan or Jake Paul. And I don't know the first fucking thing about Logan or Jake Paul other than they are performative for performative sake. They like to be flashy. Yep. They like to jump on MMA or boxing and things like that. And I know, what is it, Logan Paul that's the boxer now, the fighter?
I aggressively pay no attention to those douchebags.
But they do dumb shit with their money. Like they had a lot of crap because he bought like 100 like Game Boy Colors and epoxied them all together and made a table out of it. Or like he gets crap because he's a Pokemon fan. He wears like a multi-hundred-thousand-dollar Charizard card around his neck as jewelry, as bling, as the ultimate bling for a nerd like him. And see, I don't care about that. It could have been so easy for Jimmy to just be like, yeah, I've got millions of dollars and my videos get millions of views and I'm going to keep making these videos and I'll keep getting this money and I'll buy a fucking island and maybe I'll launch a dick-shaped rocket into space or, you know. He could have gone any direction with this money. He could have been the biggest bastard. He could have been, you know, driving Bentleys and Rolls Royces and
throwing cash out the window at homeless people.
Yeah, he could have easily been that guy. And we'd still watch his videos because his videos are entertaining. But he chose the path of altruism. He chose to find ways to monetize what he does to help people. And whether you think it's performative porn or not is irrelevant to me at this point, you know? I mean, I care, but I care about what you think. Honestly, I'm really curious, and as listeners to the podcast go, I'd really love to know where you weigh in on this, whether you've heard of Mr. Beast or not, but I at the end of the day, it's not going to change my opinion of Mr. Beast. I'm hugely in his camp because he has found a way to genuinely help people with problems, with, you know, financial woes, with hearing loss, with vision loss, and who knows what he'll do next, you know?
Yeah, here's the thing I don't understand. The Elon Musk simps who are always, oh, yes, Daddy Musk, whatever, who are, oh, he's doing such great things. He invented Tesla. He didn't. He's the first billionaire in space. He's not.
He's not.
and they worship at his altar and sniff his throne and finger his booty hole. But then Mr. Beast comes along, and he says it better than I could. This is a tweet dated January 30th of this year. This is from at Mr. Beast. Twitter, rich people should help others with their money. Me, okay, I'll use my money to help people, and I promise to give away all my money before I die, every single penny. Twitter, Mr. Beast bad.
Yeah.
Make up your fucking minds, internet.
Yeah. People truly want to have it both ways. They don't want to see people succeed.
No.
And that's the celebrity culture that we live in. Because, you know, positivity only goes so far in the media. But if a fucking train wreck story, that gets clicks and views. Look at TMZ.
Big time.
TMZ has made their career, their entire market on celebrity crash.
And paparazzi bullshit.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Is yes, you know, positivity gets a certain amount of traction, but negativity always gets more. And so it's like people don't want to see someone popular succeed. They don't want to see Mr. Beast go out there and do the things that he does and be the things that he can be when there's, you know, people like Elon Musk lighting money on fire, you know? There's just so many other ways to get that negativity that they become negative themselves. They can't see the good that he's doing for the good that he's doing. And that bothers me. It really does. And that's kind of what fired me up to want to do this conversation. It's initially I was trying to find out, and the conversation was just going to be about popular YouTubers and where they are and what they've been doing. And we could definitely do that another time. But it really got me into thinking about Mr. Beast, because I've been watching his videos for years. I don't even know how many years. I've been subscribed for years. I follow him on Twitter. I follow him on Instagram. I follow him on YouTube. I'm a big fan. And it just bothers me how people can misconstrue what he's doing as negative. People want to try and find the negative in every single damn thing they see out there without looking at the positives. And it's because negative sells. And that's, you know, if I trash Mr. Beast on his, you know, giving people sight back, if I bitch about the fact that, oh, it's not full sight, he can, removing cataracts only does so much, yada, yada, yada. It's like, okay. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It only goes so far. Well, it's like, at least he's doing that. You know, what are you doing?
Remember when Elon Musk said, if you could give me a detailed plan for how to solve world hunger, then I'll sell off enough Tesla stock to do it.
Nope.
And then the World Health Organization came back with a plan of about $6.2 billion, and then just crickets from old Muskie.
And then he bought Twitter and set it on fire.
And he bought Twitter. Yeah. $6.2 billion versus $44 billion.
And which would have been the more valuable gift to the world? And that's the thing. Again, negativity sells. If I go on trashing Mr. Beast, giving a waitress a car, I'll get views, and I'll get clicks, and I'll get engagement because people will want to jump to his defense or jump to my defense, and it's going to get me viral, as opposed to people who say, hey, good job, Mr. Beast. You know, they don't get nearly the traction, you know?
No.
And unfortunately, I think that that's the negativity that sells. And I know this is kind of rambly, and I feel like I'm kind of rambling, but at the same time, it's like, it's not something that's ever going to change my mind. There's not a way that I'm going to start thinking about Mr. Beast differently. Like, unless he's got, like, a basement full of children that he sucks the bone marrow out of when nobody's looking, but...
Yeah, like, I'm pretty hard in his camp, too. It would take something like, you know, a credible assault allegation or you know, he actually reinvested a portion of his portfolio into child labor slave diamond mines in South Africa. Well, you know, not an emerald mine, that's Elon Musk. But, you know, it would take something really horrific for me to be like, you know, the dude's just built up so much goodwill in the culture. From the people whose opinions, well, I mean, I'm not going to say whose opinions are good because it's just because it's my opinion. But I just, you know, the whole thing, I don't get it. I don't get it. The dude is taking his money and doing good things. Everybody is saying people who have money should be altruistic and should reinvest and should pay it forward and all this. And then when somebody comes along and does exactly that, he gets shit for it. Fucking cut it out. Make up your goddamn minds.
So now this, I just thought this is an interesting way to kind of throw this into the conversation. It's kind of a capper. Mr. Beast top 10 giveaways. And this is according to a website called giveawaylisting.com. I don't know. what the value of this website is, so bear with me. It's just kind of a good way to find some of the biggest ones he's done. Number 10, a mystery box worth $250,000. Number 9, he did a Squid Game challenge after Squid Game became so popular for a grand prize total of $456,000. He did a Leave the Circle challenge at number 8 worth $500,000. He did a game of tag worth $500,000. He did a Stay in the Circle game for $500,000, another $500,000. A kids versus adults tournament, which I watched that one. That was amusing as hell. Yeah, but big, one giant square room full of kids, one giant square room full of their parents. And whichever group lasted the longest or had the most people still in it by the end got their share of $500,000. He did a hide-and-seek contest worth $1,000,000. He did an influencer tournament, cash prize of up to $1,000,000. He bought a private island worth an estimated $2 million and gave it away. And then he also gave away a private jet worth $2.5 million. So the man is not about spending his money. And those are just the ones. None of those were really the altruistic ones. Those are just the ones for clicks and likes and eyeballs. None of those were the, I spent $3 million to help 1,000 people hear better. Or I spent however many millions of dollars to help people see. Or things like that.
I bought out a car lot and then sold cars for pennies.
There is a certain amount of performance that has to go into these videos to create the content that makes the advertisers give them money to then enable them to give their money to other people. He has donated so much money and time and resources and effort into worthwhile charities, the trees and the ocean waste and just general goodwill, that I think the only reason people are shitting on him at this point is because they figure that's going to get them noticed. It's going to get them eyeballs. It's going to get them credit and clout and fame and whatever else.
Envy is one of the uglier emotions.
I don't genuinely think there are people that would fault Mr. Beast for his generosity. They may not like the way he has to go about doing it, but that's his avenue. He's found his way in. He's found his niche.
Whatever cures blindness in 1,000 people, however you get there, it's a net good. It's a net positive for goodwill and good energy in the universe and altruism and charity and love. And that's... I'm baffled. I'm going to be baffled after we get done with this. We're not solving anything here.
No.
But how you can hate on this guy is just, it's bizarre to me.
It's ludicrous. It really is. I don't get it. But we definitely want to know what y'all think. Hit us up at Facebook, facebook.com/feelyourfandom. Hit us up in our email, feelyourfandom@gmail.com.
FYFTalentbooking@gmail.com is the backup address that Smo used to get in our ears, so you know it'll get to us.
Yeah.
And you can find us on what's left of Twitter at @fuel_your. You can find us on Instagram @fuelyourfandom. And any place you buy, sell, trade, barter, or steal podcasts, we're going to be able to be found and in your ear holes. However, if you're impatient, and I sometimes am, and you want to get the latest and greatest and masturbatest episodes while they're still wet, fresh, and screaming, my boy Saint here puts those things up early Friday mornings over at fuelyourfandom.buzzsprout.com. BUZZSPROUT. FeelYourFandom@Buzzsprout.com, and that's where we're going to be.
Absolutely. And if for whatever reason, Jimmy, you hear this, we are firmly in your camp. We support what you do. We wish we had the audience to do what you do. But until we do, just keep being you, man. Don't let the haters get at you. It's bullshit. You're doing a lot of good for the world. I don't think he's going to hear this. But, you know, you never know. But we are definitely in your camp. We are in your camp, Mr. Beast. And we always will be. So keep doing you. Be the entrepreneur and philanthropist that you've become. We really appreciate it.
Talk about somebody who actually puts his money where his mouth is when it comes to being the change he wants to see in the world.
Absolutely. And that's kind of what we like to see. Don't talk about it, be about it. And he's been about it. So
walking the walk.
we want to know what y'all think. What's your take on this situation? Are you in Mr. Beast's favor? Are you, you think it's just performative porn and think he's just doing it for clicks and views? Tell us where you weigh in. We're immensely curious as to people's impressions on this philanthropic effort by Mr. Beast. So hit us up and let us know. But until then, we want to thank you for listening to another episode of the Feel Your Fandom podcast. And please do remember that what we tell every week is that everything is fandom, and fandom is everything. Take care.
And as a final note, if you've stuck around this long, we forgot to mention, but thought it was important to mention that one of Mr. Beast's crew is a human named Chris Tyson. I think it's Chris Tyson?
I believe so.
An employee named Chris Tyson. And Chris has been very openly in transition on Mr. Beast's channel for quite a while. Apparently has been transitioning gender identity for quite a while, and Mr. Beast has been in their corner. And people are also giving Mr. Beast shit for having this openly trans person who is changing in front of everybody's eyes, which can't be an easy thing to do as a public figure. And they're giving him shit for that, too. So, you know, just ties right back into what we were talking about earlier about just, you know, stay woke. People matter.
Absolutely. People matter 100%.